Well, hello, and welcome to a rainy day edition of Radio Fishing. This is Fish and Frank in the chair, and we have Jeff.
Hello.
And we have Steve.
Hello.
All right. Now, part of what we're going to try and get into what's going on with the fishing and, you know, what's all this stuff going to do and everything else, and because it's kind of a big question we keep getting asked right now. And so we're going to try and answer some of those questions or lie to you better than anybody in the state will. So one way or another, we're going to get into this. All right, enough with the guitar. Okay, anyway, to give you a little background, Jeff, you fish the Peace River.
Most of the time, yeah.
You go from the 41 Bridge all the way up past Wachula, Zolfo Springs.
Yeah, I usually put in the Navigator and go south to the bridge and then work my way up north, go up to Arcadia.
So you're... You do a lot with the river. Now, I double-checked myself because I said, "Boy, this had never happened again before," but it had happened in 1998.
Yeah. The high water all winter.
The last big El Nino, we had a big, massive influx of water. And I guess my radiation-soaked brain just didn't, you know. This is the problem. When they shoot nuclear chemicals into your head, a lot of stuff gets lost. But
kind of like our new digital cameras.
Yes. One too many pictures.
Yep.
Your disc is full.
Yep.
All right. Steve, you're a relative newcomer.
Yes, sir.
Now, this is what, your second winter here?
This is my second winter here. It sure is.
So, radical change from last year.
Radical. Very different. I have found, and let me just say this, being cut my teeth on freshwater fishing, I tried to make fishing here a lot harder than it was. I have found out that these fish are programmed a lot like freshwater fish. You can catch them the same way. So just all you freshwater guys, don't make it harder than it is. Don't drive yourself crazy trying to. It's really the same kind of thing.
Yeah, the fish don't know the difference between the freshwater and saltwater lures.
They don't.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, kind of a jumping subject, that one of the hardest parts of our job is to reboot somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And get them to remember, you know how to fish. Yep. Now, I would say the biggest ducks out of water here are the guys who fish the coastal Atlantic from Jersey, Massachusetts, those areas. That's a lot harder switch from there to here.
Yeah, because they're striper fishing and, you know.
But we don't have a continental shelf. We don't have a drop-off. We don't have a ledge. It's
not that you can get to very easily with a small boat. That's for sure.
But a big boat or small boat, to get what they're used to fishing, you literally got to go 30 miles out in the Gulf.
At least, to get to that first drop.
But if you're from the Midwest or inland New York, inland Massachusetts, you know, and you're a freshwater fisherman, boy, this is an easy switch.
It sure is.
Very so. Very much so.
You know.
Get a lot of people that come down and they say they left all their lures up north, and I'm showing them the same lures that they were using up north.
Yeah, it's, you know, I look at them and they say, "Well, what is this for?" Bass. Are you kidding me? That's a snook lure. What's wrong with you?
Right.
And then all of a sudden they start to get it,
yeah.
You know. So, anyway, but back on, my kind of topic is, and I picked these guys because Steve is a newcomer.
Yeah.
Jeff, you were raised here. I mean,
yeah, pretty much. Moved here when I was five, so.
So, and you've been doing the Peace River since you've been old enough to get away on your own.
Yeah, pretty much. I didn't do much fishing, though, till I got out of my teenage years.
Yeah, well, that was when you were back into the speedboat, powerboat.
Yeah, it was probably every fisherman's nightmare on this river back then, but now I'm more of a fisherman, yes.
Well, we all change.
We do, yeah.
Yes, I had an exuberant youth myself.
Yeah,
so, as you can tell, because I can't hardly walk. And
right.
Know, there's a lot of things go on with that. And anyway, thank you for a peaceful night's sleep, by the way.
No problem. So, anyway, very good. Glad that helps.
Yes. We're going to me, I've been really looking at the river for about 25 years.
Yeah.
You know, kind of watching it because the river is a big determining factor in what happens in the harbor.
Yeah.
The Caloosahatchee gets all the press.
Yeah, Caloosahatchee gets all the press because they got the, you know, the dam and locks coming from the Lake Okeechobee, and so they get a little more attention that way than we get.
All right, let's break it down for people, though. There are three rivers that come into Charlotte Harbor.
Yeah.
At the very top edge of the west wall is the Myakka River.
Right.
Then across, and with the mouth kind of pointing right at the west side of the harbor, is the Peace River.
Yes.
Now, the Myakka River is, what, 80-some miles long?
About that, I'm not sure. I'd have to look at that and see, but it's right around there.
Right around 80.
Yeah.
The Peace River is, I never remember if it's 104 or 140.
It's 70 miles as the crow flies from here to Zolfo Springs or Pioneer Park up in Wachula area, and it's up at Hancock Lake, which is just above Zolfo Springs, so it's Hardy County. It's quite
north
a
of I-4.
Yeah, north.
Because when you go from Tampa to Orlando on I-4, you pass a bridge that says Peace River on it.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's just say it's 104 miles long.
Yeah.
But there's, I forget how many thousands of acres drain into the Peace River.
Yeah.
And then you've got thousands of more acres draining into the Myakka River.
Yes.
Then you've got thousands more acres draining into the Coosahatchee. Now, the Coosahatchee is at the very bottom of Charlotte Harbor,
yeah.
And the Myakka River and Peace Rivers are at the very top of Charlotte Harbor.
Yeah.
Now, where the Coosahatchee dumps out is right next to Sanibel, Ponarasa. So at this time of year, Ponarasa just spits out a tremendous amount of fresh water, as well as Redfish Pass, which is the next one north.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Redfish and Ponarasa are producing massive amounts of fresh water coming out of the Coosahatchee. Now, normally Boca Grande Pass takes the bulk of our fresh water out of the harbor.
Yeah.
And this year, even Captiva's getting brown.
Yep, Captiva's getting brown. Little Gasparilla's getting brown.
So we're looking at brown water, fresh water, going out of Ponarasa, Captiva, Redfish, Boca Grande, and Gasparilla.
Yep.
All of our major passes now are pushing out fresh water.
Yes.
Now, the one thing about fresh water is it tends to trigger red tide. Now, all of us who work in the industry and live and play and recreate on the water and all that, we are not biologists or scientists, but to us it's kind of funny that the rain hits the ground all over Southwest Florida and it runs into the Three Rivers, Coosahatchee, Peace, Myakka.
Yeah.
With it, taking with it fertilizer from fields,
houses,
fertilizers from people's yards, animal poop, pretty much everything you can think of washes down, eventually ends up in one of those three rivers.
Sure.
And it's something they started years ago, build on the river because whatever you put in it just goes away.
Yeah, right. Well, we always had that attitude. Yeah.
Yeah, you just put it in the river. It just goes away.
It's gone.
Yeah.
So now, all these fertilizers and stuff get into the water and it goes out, and red tide is actually a plant.
Yeah, it's a half plant, half plankton animal type thing.
Yeah, it's kind of an animal, kind of a plant.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really an animal as in woof, woof, woof,
right,
you know,
right.
But it is
single
animal,
cell, whatever type. Right. Yeah.
More like a jellyfish or a bacteria, you know, that it's a plant with animal characteristics.
Right.
Right.
But even though we're not rocket scientists, I think we can all agree on a basic part of knowledge is that when you fertilize a plant,
it grows.
It pollinates and grows.
It grows. It wants to do its thing. I mean, that's why we fertilize corn crops and wheat and everything. If you fertilize a plant and it didn't do any good, why would we do it?
That's right.
So now, according to the scientists, this has nothing to do with red tide.
Right.
But we're going to call it direct observation science and BS, and you guys cannot get your act together enough to say, okay, when you fertilize a plant like red tide, and it's an algae bloom, it's algae at its base.
It's going to feed on that and get bigger.
It's going to feed on the fertilizer and get bigger.
And it grows.
And have babies.
And then, you know, you have the whole pollinization thing going on.
Yep.
And people need to understand that red tide is very similar to ragweed or any other plant, like the palm, pine trees down here, produce all that yellow
pollen.
And it gets over everything. I mean, it literally covers the cars, the houses. I've seen the whole areas that are just yellow because of the pollen.
Yes.
And so plants can produce a tremendous amount of spores.
Mm-hmm.
It's pollen, spores, whatever. And that's what the red tide is doing.
Yeah.
People confuse red tide with poison
that we've put in the water.
Right.
Or that it's a natural poison.
Right.
And it's not poison like arsenic, anthrax, right. you know, right. all these other things that right. occur in nature. It's not like eating a hemlock.
Right.
right. You know?
Right.
But the spores, which ragweed and stuff cause people, you know, have runny noses, sure. coughing, all that yeah. kind of stuff, itchy eyes. The ragweed is a much lesser neurotoxin. It
right,
kind of plugs right. up your system, but doesn't really... the neurotoxin aspect of the pollen from the red tide is kind of a neurotoxin. What it does is it paralyzes the lungs, gills, so soft tissues.
Yeah, so the fish can't process breathe. The oxygen.
Right.
Yeah.
right. It basically suffocates the fish to yeah. death.
Right.
Now, people always go, well, I wouldn't eat a fish out of red tide. Well, I wouldn't eat a dead one floating across the no. water either. You yeah. know, A, I don't know how long it's been dead. I'm, you know,
and but when you go to the fish market and buy a fish and it's a whole fish, if he's got clear eyes and red gills, you're going to buy him and eat him because he's nice and fresh.
And the big thing about the red tide is how it will suffocate the fish. And there's nothing wrong with fishing in a red tide area if you're looking for dinner.
Yeah, right. right.
But if you're going to go catch and release fishing, you cannot successfully catch and release in red tide.
Be a little stressful on them. Yeah. They're already on their last.
It's a death sentence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, that's one of the hard things for people to understand about this whole red tide issue is that the fish are running on very low oxygen. When you're in a red tide area and your throat's scratchy
yeah.
and, you know, you're coughing and everything else, do you really feel like running a marathon at that time or no. getting in a fist fight?
Right. Exactly. You know what I mean? Yeah, you're not going to do very well as if you weren't nothing bothering you.
Exactly. And that's the whole thing because the red tide does not poison the meat of the fish at all.
No, not at all.
So if he bites the hook and you fight him up and you're keeping for dinner, all good.
Yep.
But if you're going to try and release him back into the wild,
it'll be tough.
Yeah, you're not. Right. You're not accomplishing your goal.
No, you're not.
You know, you're really just, you know, catch and kill.
Catch and
you
catch
might
and
as well
kill.
Fillet the sucker because well, he's dead yeah. either way.
Right. That's right.
So, anyway, when you were up north, Steve, did yes, you sir. Hear about red tide up there?
Yes, we did hear about it up there, and like you said before, it was like the plague up there. You know, oh gosh, red tide, you can't touch it, it'll kill you. It, and being down here for the short time that I have and listening to different things, and I found out it's no more than the yellow pollen that's on our car. You know, we'd say, oh, you can't fish in it if you got lung problems, you'd have to wear oxygen, blah. And you know, you find out it's really not that. It's the same thing up north as we call pollen off of a pine tree that covers up your car. You walk outside, you sneeze, your eyes burns. It's about it. It's definitely not a death sentence if you have any kind of breathing issues. I mean, it's no more than pollen up north from a dogwood tree or a pine tree.
Well, it's a, I would say a little bit more,
different, but the same kind of animal.
Well,
same,
everybody reacts to it right, different. Your tolerances right. are different. You might be allergic to pollen off a tree, and it might affect you more than somebody yeah. else. But it'll be the same. With
we
the
don't
same
want to give people right, the idea that it's right. actually safe, but right. it's not.
Same concept.
Not yes. the death sentence that right. everybody thinks right. it is. I mean, it's just one of those things. But it's amazing how when you're not from this area,
right.
and all you hear is rumor.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth. Yeah.
I mean, and that's just the worst thing ever. Yeah. So one of the things we're trying to do today is talk about it. Now, in the summertime, when we get a lot of fresh water, it's usually hot and brown.
Yes.
Now, it's not hot and brown now.
No.
It's cold
it's
and
cold
brown.
And brown.
Yeah. We don't have that warm factor going on. The warm, but we still got the...
The Gulf is 60 degrees.
Yeah.
So we don't have cool, salty water coming in from the Gulf. We have cold, salty water coming in from the Gulf. And then when the tide goes out, we've got cold, fresh water going out.
Yeah.
What do you... Jeff, let's start with you. What's your opinion on what's this doing to the fishing? I mean, where would the fish go? Where would the best... What's your best guess?
Well, the fish are going to stay with their food. Obviously, they don't really have a whole lot going on in their lives other than proliferation and eating food to their next meal. So they're going to probably stay pretty close to their food source. If it disappears and goes somewhere else, they're probably going to follow it unless it's replaced with another food source. Like in the summertime, typically when we get our rains, maybe a lot of our shrimp and that will move out into the Gulf, but they're replaced with pilchards and chubs, creek chubs. We had a beautiful tilapia run, you know, last year, and that put a lot of bait into the area, and a lot of fish stayed, you know. But if they don't have any food source to be with, then they're going to go and be close to their food source.
So, all right, so your primary thing is food source. Now, to me, I'm going to guess that would mean the incoming tide would be a little bit better because it's going to raise the salinity level up.
And bring saltwater bait in with it.
Well, it, even like shrimp and stuff won't really leave, but they'll bury down in the sand because the sand has a lot of salt in it.
Right.
It's had hundreds or millions of years to absorb the salt, and salt gets trapped in there. So they're still getting
their
salt.
And they're going to bury up in that because it's cool, too. They do that also. They're going to bury in the sand when it gets colder and hang out there because of the consistent temperature, probably.
And so small pinfish, baitfish, shrimp, as the incoming tide would go, they would give them that salt and allow them to get active, allow them to move around and feed on their own, and it's the act of them going out looking for food or migrating at certain times of the year that would bring in the fish, because when the bait moves, the fish move.
Right. That's why I tell a lot of people, they go out and get bait, they're like, oh, we got a whole ton of bait, and then we went 15 miles to go fish. It's like, try fishing where you got your bait at. You might be surprised.
Yeah, a lot of times.
Yeah.
So, Steve, what's your thoughts on this? Now, how do you think this freshwater out, cold freshwater outgoing tide and cold saltwater incoming tides, what do you think the effect is?
Frank, what I found in my observation, and I spend quite a bit of time on the water. I mean, I fish, you know, 3-4 days a week if possible. And I've found that I think that, feeding on what Jeff said, I don't think so much that, I think they eat different things at different times of the year. I found that shrimp, a couple of months out of the year, especially December, January, February, I feel like you can go out there, and, well, of course, you're not going to find greenbacks, but I feel like that shrimp becomes way the better bait because it's more of abundance.
Yes.
And something else that I've noticed with these overflows on the river is that the freshwater pushes more to the west wall. So I feel like if you spend your time fishing on the east side, you tend to catch more fish. That's my observing. You know, I'm by no means a biologist or anything, but just from the current flows in the water.
You're not? Damn you, what are you doing on the show? Get out. Yes.
Just from personal experience being on the water, and that's what I've found, that it seems to be the saltier water stays on the east side of the harbor. And I think that's because of the flow of the rivers. And, you know, shrimp this time of the year is definitely the way to go. And my feeling on the fish, I feel like they move into the shallower backwaters because that's a deeper, darker mud is there, and that water warms quicker. And, you know, 2-3 degrees to us may not be a big deal, but to a fish, that's a huge thing. I mean, you know, they're cold-natured.
2 to 3 degrees is a lot for us if you factor in the difference between 30 and 32.
Absolutely, because one's freezing ice and one's not. Yes. So, there you go.
2-3 degrees. People always go, oh, it's only 2 degrees.
Right.
But now Robert brought up a thing on one of our previous shows about fish, the way they digest food. If it's too cold, the food will rot in their stomach before it digests. And it needs a little bit of a temperature area for certain fish to actually be able to digest their food.
Hmm.
And so 2 to 3 degrees to a fish could be the difference between food rotting in their stomach without being to be able to digest it and be able to digest and get the nutrients from the food.
Right.
So there's a lot of factors at play.
There sure is.
Now,
Frank, I would also mention that I would spend my time as an angler. In the mornings, great. If you want to get out there, get out there. But I've found that when the water has been in the sun all day long and it's at the warmest point, which is in the afternoon, that is the better time to go. The fish are more active and feed more in the afternoon. Just simply, I feel like, because the water's warmer at that point.
In the winter, yes.
And definitely this time of the year.
I can honestly tell you, I was just going to call out that choice. Is that if I had a preference, it would probably be right now an incoming tide is late in the day.
Late in the day, absolutely.
Noon, between noon and 5.
Yeah, because that's going to help back everything up.
Hey there. How you doing? So what it is what, when you're looking at it, it's about warmth right now.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Because you got cold salt water, cold fresh water, and so the biggest thing to increase the bite is going to be warmth.
Yeah. Absolutely.
A sunny day, fish in the afternoon, take your time in the morning, don't run to get out, because I don't think you're going to see the fish really doing much.
Hit these east-west canals.
East-west canals, absolutely.
Yep, they're going to be consistently warm, where like your north-south canals, you'll have to hit the east side of the canal first, and then the west side second. No, the west side first, because it's going to get hit with the sun first.
All right. Now, I think what we've talked about is pretty much kind of hitting the nail on the head, that if you do have a little bit of an incoming tide, afternoon time and some sunshine,
absolutely,
that's going to be your best time to fish.
Very, very ingredient for success.
Now, the other thing that to go into and factor into this is we have red tide along the coast.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the reason we started talking about red tide is because it is very active right now, and it's really intermittent and scattered. Gasparilla Pass, Stump Pass, Boca Captiva, but now you get around Ponarasa and it gets to be much higher concentrations, and we get a dual purpose of reasons there. One is Coosatchee dumping all those nutrients out, the nitrates and nitrites and all the fertilizer components from our yards, agricultural. Yes, if you live on a canal and you fertilize your lawn,
it's going to go
in there, fertilizing the harbor.
You're helping fertilize red tide. Yep. So always keep that down to a minimum. If you have a yard service, tell them you don't mind a little brown in the lawn.
Yeah.
Because in sandy-based soil, everything you put on top just goes right through and ends up somewhere.
Yes.
In your drinking water, in your harbor, and eventually feeding red tide. But it's acting kind of as a barrier along the coastline in some instances for our pompano, our Spanish mackerel, a lot of the fish that might try and come up into the harbor to take advantage of the harbor in the wintertime, because the harbor is always a few degrees warmer than the Gulf, and the canals are warmer than the harbor.
So salt water heats up quicker.
Right.
Yeah, this is our time of year where we get a lot of fish in.
Hmm. Usually we just don't have this much rain.
Yeah, so when that red tide creates a little barrier wall and doesn't allow us to get some of our moving fish in, or the opposite, if they're in here, they can't really
get out.
They're stuck.
They're stuck.
Right.
They're stuck, yeah.
And so that's another factor. Any thoughts or ideas on how the barrier wall's acting?
I think it matters where the bloom is going to be the heaviest as to whether they can deal with it, you know, but definitely if they hit the red tide, I think they know enough to move. Obviously, not all the fish might not know to move, but I think what happens more is they get penned in an area and trapped, and then they get overcome by the red tide.
Right. Just
depending
on where they are.
I think if they encountered it, like in the Gulf, in a ball on its own entity, they would be able to go around it and say, oh, that's not good, and they would go around it. But when they get in an area where they get trapped, then I think they get overcome by it, and then they can't do anything about it. You know, once they once it starts affecting their oxygen intake and they start going down that way, then they don't really react well, I don't think.
I'm going to say there's two fish that are mostly affected by red tide. And my firm belief is mullet react. They like eating algae.
Yep.
Now, they'll eat shrimp, they'll eat fish, they'll eat algae.
Right.
They'll pretty much eat anything in front of them.
Yep.
They don't have, they're not vegetarians, they're not this
omnivorous.
Or not that.
Omnivorous feeders.
But they don't kill for a living. They kind of go along, open and close their mouth. If it's soft, they'll swallow it. If it's hard, they spit it out.
Right.
They're just kind of, not really scavengers, but they're just, you know, if it's there, they'll eat it. If it's not, they go looking somewhere else. But they don't kill for a living.
No. Opportunistic.
Right. Fish like redfish, trout, all
predators.
Those. They kill for a living.
Yeah,
they're predators.
They're predators. Yeah.
They're predators and prey. But mullet are just prey or opportunistic. And I think sometimes at red tide, there's so much potential food in it.
Yeah.
You have so much algae there, they just go in and start eating.
Before they know it, they're incapacitated.
Incapacitated.
Yeah.
And then you have the other fish that always follows. As the mullet go in to probably eat the algae, which is red tide, they start to die. And as the mullet start to die, the decaying smell goes out into the water.
Yeah. Right.
And what is attracted to
crabs?
Crabs.
Crabs, which are not affected by red tide. Shrimp, which are not affected by red tide.
Yeah.
But catfish.
Catfish.
Oh, yeah.
Which are affected by red tide.
Yeah.
So any fish trapped in a red tide area is sending out a tremendous smell alert to all the catfish in the area. Food!
Yeah. Come on in.
They just run in there. And you ever notice how many mullet and catfish are caught in red tide?
Mostly, that's the major majority of it. Is what I
see. Yes, now, that's mostly what you're going to
see. I don't hardly ever see a redfish in it.
Every once in a while,
You know, if they get it, like you say, if they get in a bay and they get overcome by it or trapped by it, it seems like that's when they get hooked.
but most fish, I think, are that way, with the exclusion of those two. Now, mind you, people, this is not fact. This is a Frankism.
That's right.
This is right. This is a Frankism. This is what Fish and Frank thinks.
Right.
And usually, I'm going head to head with the biologist on almost everything
because
I use direct observation science, and they use voodoo and magic potions to try and come
and
up
numbers.
With their theories.
And numbers, they use numbers.
Yeah, they just I don't understand how when you look at something
formulas.
And you see it,
yeah,
that it can't be.
Right.
But this is something that theories I've evolved over the years. But I think it's pretty interesting how it all goes.
Yeah, because the freshwater kind of is the one of the components to red tide, but yet at the same time, if the water's flowing hard enough out of the river system, it won't really have time to develop.
Well, can we get red tide up here in Charlotte Harbor?
It would be hard because of the rivers we have really kind of keep it at bay. It would really take a pretty low, no water going out of the harbor event for it to come up into us.
Too much fresh water in the harbor.
It would take a relatively strong southwest wind and a long incoming tide.
Yeah, and no river flow out.
Incoming tide would slow that river down.
True. It would.
So that would push that river water back because the river can't flow against the tide. It will back up. I mean, I live in Harbor Heights. I watch it back up all the time, and then when the tide goes out, it's a massive flush.
Yes.
But it's almost impossible for red tide to come up in the upper harbor right now. From Cape Hayes North, you're not going to see the red tide.
Right. And it actually can't survive in freshwater alone. It needs that saltwater component to stay alive.
So freshwater is the one thing that kills red tide.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, they can do whatever they want to do, but you don't get red tide in a freshwater river. It does not happen in a lake. So freshwater kills red tide.
Now,
so
I heard them saying, I heard them saying on the news this morning, somebody was saying to the fact that, you know, we had a lot of freshwater getting dumped out of Caloosahatchee, and the guy was saying that freshwater will stay as a unit and go out into the Gulf, and then it'll take probably a week or 2 weeks for it to dissipate. Just what I heard. I don't want to form any opinion on that. I don't believe it totally, but I do hold a little bit of something to it. But
all right. You can test this theory that this scientist is talking about by taking a 5-gallon bucket and pour water in it and fill it, like, say, half, three-quarters full. Then take a shot glass full of black coffee.
Boilermaker?
Yeah,
Boilermaker.
drop it down in there,
and then just slowly pour that color, or put food color in it.
Yeah,
and slowly pour that food color into it.
Right,
and see how it disperses.
Right, right.
So he is right, but yes and no. The correct part about it is that he is. As the tide's going out, it will stay together.
Yeah, and you can see that with the obvious line that they show of the water, and that goes out into the Gulf 15 miles at sometimes.
When the tide comes in, it's going to break that freshwater wall up.
Yeah.
It's not going to be able to maintain its integrity.
Right. And the Gulf Stream goes counterclockwise.
Gulf Stream, the water goes from Louisiana to Mississippi, Alabama, Florida, and it comes from, on our coast, goes from the north south.
So we have the clockwise.
Clockwise. On our coast. The water flow is always from the north to the south.
Mm-hmm.
And what causes so much red tide at the bottom where we are and down to Sanibel, Captiva area, Sanibel, Estero Bay area, I misspoke. Sanibel and Estero get a huge red tide problems because when you look at the shoreline, the water comes past it, but it sticks out there. There's an indent bay.
So it actually helps pull it in.
And it eddies. It flows in a circle right there, and it creates a eddy whirlpool effect, concentrating everything in that one spot, the fresh water, the red tide, everything in there. And there's enough salt, it's still, it's not pure fresh water, because no matter how much water you dump into that Gulf, it's not going to go fresh.
Right.
So you got salt water there, but it's swirling and swirling and gathering stuff, concentrating it
right
down at the end there on the edge of Sanibel. That's why it's causing such problems there versus the lesser problems as you go up to Captiva, Cayo Costa, Little Gasparilla. As you go north, the shoreline's flatter, and everything washes down that shoreline.
Yeah, a lot less places for it to hide and gather.
Yeah, there is no gathering points there, but there is right there off of Sanibel.
Yeah.
So, anyway, we've come to the conclusion here. Fishing afternoon, if you can get an incoming tide, is probably going to be a little bit better.
Yes.
But on a general rule, I would go afternoons. Now, a pier with some fish on it.
Mm-hmm.
Who's heard about what?
Placida's been doing pretty good for the sheephead net. They've been getting some good size ones out there. Everybody has been talking about the water clarity is not good.
And intermittent red tide.
Intermittent, yes.
Because the red tide can move in and then move out. You could be standing there and everything's fine, then all of a sudden you feel your throat scratching, you start coughing, and the red tide could either be moving in to hang out there for a while, or it could just be passing by.
Yeah.
It's just like if you have a bunch of leaves on the water. They don't stay where you just threw them. If you took a bushel basket full of leaves and tossed them on the water, that would give you an idea what the red tide's going to do, because they're going to move this way, they're going to move that way, and eventually they're all going to scatter and disperse.
Yeah.
But they do stay together as a bunch for a while.
Yeah.
And but it's not like, okay, there's red tide there, it's always going to be red tide.
Yeah.
It could be perfect and then bad and then go back right again to perfect.
Yeah, it wouldn't take much.
So, okay, you did Placida. I've heard Lashley.
Lashley, yeah. We've had some reports of customers coming in. Lashley, different time in the afternoon. Some guys this morning popping cork, shrimp, catching some nice trout. Actually, the guy came back and got extra bait, so they did real well. That's a couple of different people that we've heard off Lashley.
El Joe Bean wasn't doing bad for sheephead either. El Joe Bean
wasn't doing bad for sheephead. On a high tide, Bayshore, there's some trout moving through there. Same thing, just fan cast with popping cork of shrimp. You know, don't concentrate on one little area. You find them, then, you know, there they are. Yeah. But they're not staying. They're just kind of moving through.
They're still catching some whiting, but I sure haven't heard anything about any cobia.
No cobia.
They left.
No, I think they're hitting that barrier, red tide barrier.
And staying out.
And
staying
out.
Coming in. Yeah.
I think that's part of the problem there.
Yeah.
And if I was a cobia, I'd be down in the Keys right now.
Oh, absolutely.
It's several
beautiful weather.
I would be down towards the Keys. I wouldn't be up this far right now.
I agree, too.
So, anyway, anything else we should go over?
I don't think we could. Other than we got some rain going on today.
Definitely.
You know, that should be cleared up in another day or so, and hopefully we'll be back into some better weather.
And just keep in mind, guys, you know, this colder water, fish slower. These fish are all affected by this cold water. Slow everything down. Yeah. You know, that's going to be a real big key to your success, especially with artificials. You want to work everything slower.
Yeah, if you think you're going slow enough, stop.
Stop, yeah. I mean, you know, you definitely don't want to go too fast. These fish are not going to burn any energy to chase anything. So, fish slow.
Okay, well, let's see. Ah, yes, indeedy, deedy, deedy. The music is playing. Well, we had Jeff here, and Jeff is our resident river expert. I mean, he does fish the Mayak River, the Peace River. You do the Closahatchee River a little bit.
Yeah.
Jeff is our kind of inland water expert. He's been doing this for, you know, many, many years. And then we have Steve, our newcomer, ex-Bass Pro, I guess you would say.
Yeah, tried that.
Yeah, he went through the Bass Pro thing, you know, Bass Professional thing, let's put it that way.
Yeah. Professional Bass Circuit.
Professional Bass Circuit. So, anyway, this is Fish and Frank, and this was Radio Fishing, and thank you guys for listening. We'll see you on the next one.
Go fishing.